No longer are the Packers in first place in the NFC North. They lost their first of four straight games within the division and now take on the new division leader this upcoming Sunday. To find out what's wrong with the Packers and where they go from here, we bring on Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a game this upcoming Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings. To do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone today.
Expert interview.
We have Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how does it feel to be on the 600th episode of Railbird Central?
It's good to hear. I'm hoping that I may be the person who's been on the most out of all of your guests with how often I've been on the show, but definitely good to see that we've hit this many shows now.
You are definitely the person who's been the guest the most, and I thank you for doing so. Let's get into the past game here for the Green Bay Packers. Take one last look at it. Once again, kind of another pedestrian game from Aaron Rodgers, which, you know, isn't unusual for one game. Even the best players have the occasional bad game. But is there anything uncharacteristic that's kind of stood out the past several weeks in terms of Rodgers' play?
There's been a few interesting things, especially when you compare Rodgers' play recently with other quarterbacks when they have bad stretches of game, or especially some of the big names who haven't been playing as well this year. First off, a lot of his play now compared to in the past, he's been worse when there hasn't been any pressure on him. A lot of times when you see a quarterback doing poorly, it's because he's under pressure more, making more bad decisions because of that. And that leads to worse play. Where here, he's just not performing as well without, even when there's no pressure compared to the past. And a lot of it's also interesting in that he's not making a lot of really terrible throws where you're just wondering why he even threw the ball in the first place, or making plays that are leading to a lot of turnovers like you might see from some other quarterbacks going through a bad stretch. He's just making a lot of throws that are either inaccurate from being overthrows or underthrows or being in front of the receiver, or a couple of plays where he's just trying to force things a little bit into close coverage, even if he's not forcing them to the point where it could be intercepted. But he also just isn't making as many big time throws as we're used to seeing out of him. So I'm not sure what's leading to all of these somewhat inaccurate throws and him not being as well good as he has been in the past, but definitely something's not going right.
Yeah, it is odd to see for as long as this kind of streak or whatever has lasted for him, to see this coming out of Aaron Rodgers. If we talk about his targets, I thought the fact that Davante Adams had 10 receptions kind of overshadowed his impact in that it wasn't very good considering he caught less than 50% of his targets. And complained to the official for a flag multiple times this past Sunday's game. How did Pro Football Focus grade Adams, who maybe statistically looked like he had a good game?
We graded him out a little bit below average in this one. Of course, if you look at 10 catches, that looks like you're having a good game. But like you said, that came on, I think, 21 targets. And the Packers, they had an absurd 69 pass plays in this one, which 69 is typically the amount of plays you'll see out of an offense total, adding up pass plays and run plays and plays called back by penalty. But that's how many the Packers had on passes alone. And on those 10 catches that he had, only four of them ended up going for first downs. None of them were beyond, I think, 20 yards. And then he also had two drop passes in there, too. So while he did have a couple of good plays in that, a lot of the passes didn't go very far, even though he caught the ball and he had those negative plays. So while it may have looked good if you're playing fantasy football in a points per reception league, it really wasn't that big of an impact that he had on the game despite all of those targets.
Yeah, you can argue that one of those drops could have been a touchdown as well. I think the Packers can do a better job of scheming ways to get Randall Cobb open, but I think he can take part of the blame too. Is there any reason why he wasn't a bigger part of the game plan this past Sunday?
I think he had a decent part of the game plan. He could have been a little bit bigger, but he was targeted 10 times, which is a decent amount for a game. He only caught 5 of those passes, though. Only 2 of them went for first downs, and he had another drop in this one. So part of it is on him. This is, I think, his 4th drop over these past 2 games compared to just 9 catches. So that isn't a very good touch-to-drop ratio there. But I think it's, again, the Lions did make a couple changes to their defense in this one, specifically against the Packers, and specifically in the middle of their defense with which linebackers they use, which safeties they use. And I think part of that was to scheme to try stopping Cobb, but it worked again that a team was able to do it. So I'm not sure if it's someone else needs to step up so some of the coverage isn't so much on Cobb or what needs to happen, but Cobb hasn't been playing well both this game and in recent games as well.
If we take a look at the Packers offensive line, I thought this unit did pretty well in pass protection, but poorly in trying to open up holes for the run game. Does that seem to be the general consensus?
I agree to an extent there. I think the offensive line and pass protection, they did an excellent job there. Rodgers was sacked a few times, but all of those were on plays where a defender had to go pursue Rodgers out of the pocket, or they were plays where the defender was unblocked altogether. So there weren't really any of those sacks that we blamed an offensive lineman for, and the offensive line didn't allow any hits either. So each one of them individually just allowed 1 or 2 hurries each. So on 69 pass blocks, those are excellent numbers. Then in the run game, outside of Bulaga, no one had that good or that bad of a game. All of them had a couple of good and a couple of bad run blocks in there. I think this one, it was a little more stark, was the reason the Packers couldn't get the run game going. On his 15 carries, there were only a couple plays where we noticed anything good out of start in terms of making any sort of good burst or good cuts to get first downs or make more yardage after contact. I think starts was a lot of the reason the Packers weren't able to do more, even though part of it was on the offensive line as well.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy that James Starks played 84 snaps or whatever it was. I mean, obviously they had to go with the more with Eddie Lacy being out of the game, but that's an outrageous number for a running back. If we turn our attention to the defensive side of the football, Nathan, Clinton Dix sure seemed to bounce back nicely from what I thought was a poor performance in Carolina the week before. Can you analyze his play both against the run and the pass?
This was an excellent game out of him. This was the best game of his career, both in the run game and tied for his best in the pass game in terms of our grade. In the run game, there were 4 times where he was able to make either a tackle for a loss or a tackle for a short gain, and then nothing really negative in the run game either. So he made a lot of good plays without doing anything poorly in the run game. Then in the pass game, of course, he had his 1 interception. Another 2 plays where it was 3rd down and the catch was made, but then he was able to make the tackle before the offense was able to get a 1st down. So those were led to 4th down. And then along with that, another play where he had some close coverage, which led to an incompletion. So again, a lot of good things came out of him in the pass game. So in terms of our PFF ratings, this was not just the best game out of the safety this week, but probably one of the top 5 performances out of the safety so far this year.
That's great to hear. Sticking in the secondary for a while, I thought Demaryius Randall was doing pretty good for a rookie. And now I'm starting to take that for a rookie qualifier out of there and thinking he's just pretty good among all cornerbacks. Would that seem to be the case?
Yeah, it was interesting to see him playing some in the base defense for Casey Hayward in this one, and it's because he's been playing so well so far this year. With our new 0 to 100 grades that we've been using this year, Rando currently is at an 81.2, which ranks him 23rd best among 110 qualifying cornerbacks. So that's obviously really good for a cornerback in their rookie year. Both Casey Hayward and Sam Shields also rank in the top 32. So right now the Packers basically have three number one cornerbacks on the roster all playing well. Why Randall is doing that well is he's been doing a great job in preventing a lot of passes thrown his way to be caught. He's only allowed 52% of passes thrown his way to be caught, which is among the lowest rates in the league. And part of that's because he's been doing such a good job defending passes. He has 8 pass defenses, which is good for 7th best among cornerbacks. And the only reason he's not higher is because when he has a lot of catches, he has allowed a couple of big plays in this one. He is allowing 17.3 yards per catch, which is the 9th most among cornerbacks so far this year. So he's definitely doing a great job so far, and the one thing he needs to do is stop preventing some of those big plays. And once he's able to do that, he'll be among the top cornerbacks in all the league.
Yeah, I think the way he's able to break on the football is absolutely amazing, and part of the reasons he's done so good. I saw Mike Daniels was one of the players with the highest grades from Pro Football Focus to come out of this last game, which was a little bit surprising to me, seeing as he was only officially credited with just one quarterback hit and no sacks. So what did Mike Daniels do so well, Nathan?
Sure. Part of that was his pass rushing, which he does well in most games. Along with that one hit he had him at 4 quarterback hurries, which combined that with a hit for 5 pressures, looked most for any Packers pass rusher this week. But what really made Daniels' performance this week stand out is how well he played against the run. There were 3 times where he was able to make the tackle and the Lions were only able to get a short gain. Another 2 plays where he was able to beat a block, which forced the runner to make a cut. Another 2 plays where he was able to push the offensive lineman into the backfield to disrupt those runs. And typically when a defensive lineman is playing a lot, he'll have both positive and negative plays in the run game, but there really wasn't much negative out of Daniels in this game against the run. So the Lions in this game ran the ball 26 times, managed fewer than 2 yards per carry. And Daniels was the biggest reason, although plenty of other Packers in this game also had a good game against the run.
Good to hear. As we start looking forward to this upcoming game against the Minnesota Vikings, this is a team that's overtaken the lead in the NFC North Division. What do the Packers have to look out for on both offense and defense this upcoming Sunday?
Sure. With the Vikings, I definitely have to start with their defense. They've been able to build a great unit there, with both hitting on some draft picks as well as making some good free agent additions. At this point, they basically have 3 all-pro players, defensive tackle Linval Joseph, linebacker Anthony Barr, and safety Harrison Smith, so good players throughout the defense. Another thing to note is their defensive line, all 4 of their starters in their pass rush unit are good at rushing the passer, so that'll definitely be a little bit of a challenge as well. But if they do have one weakness on defense, is that they've been putting some faith in some recent draft picks who haven't quite lived up to their expectations yet. I know Eric Kendricks recently got their full-time starting job, but then also got hurt recently. But if he does play, he's been struggling some in coverage, so he's someone that the Packers could take advantage of with Richard Rodgers. And then cornerback Xavier Rhodes, he's one of their starting outside cornerbacks. And he's allowed 6 touchdowns so far this year, which is tied for 3rd most in the league. So if the Packers can take advantage of anyone in the pass game, it'll be one of those 2 players. Then the Vikings offense, they have an okay offensive line, some good players and some bad ones. So the Packers can take advantage of there. And the Vikings, they really have 2 good skill players that the Packers need to worry about, Adrian Peterson and Stephon Diggs. Peterson hasn't been as consistent as he has in the past, making a lot of good runs, but he has still been able to show that big play potential, which he's done several times this year. And then Diggs started out playing really well when he was finally getting some playing time, but he has slowed down recently. And with the Packers cornerback, I think they can stop Diggs. So as long as the Packers can stop Peterson, I think they can definitely keep this a close, low-scoring game. But the Vikings defense is not the team that you want to be facing when your offense is out of rhythm and you're trying to get back into rhythm.
Well, hopefully the Packers can definitely keep it close, Nathan. We'll take a look back at this game next Wednesday. It'll be a short turnaround as the Packers then play on Thanksgiving and have a few Thursday games. So thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday on the show. So thanks to him and thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we continue on with our next segment.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, it appears as if Tim Mastay didn't touch the field goal, the potential game-winning field goal this past Sunday, as special teams coordinator Ron Zook acknowledged in his Monday press conference, as well as Mastay reportedly claiming in some other interviews. So I know I was kind of one guilty in perpetuating this, or at least sharing it, as I saw a video shared online by Sports Illustrated, I believe it was. I certainly wasn't the only one that thought this, perhaps, and it still kind of does look like Mastay gets his hand in the way. But apparently not the case, if you know, we are to believe what Tim Mastay and others are saying. I just thought that was interesting because that was kind of definitely making the rounds and getting a lot of attention, a lot of traffic on the internet, that thinking that the Packers had blocked their own potential game-winning kick. Apparently not the case. Apparently just Mason Crosby kind of his toe went, his follow through, or I suppose not the follow through, but the on the swing to hit the ball shortly before making contact, his toe hit the ground, which kind of made his foot bounce up a little bit and kind of hit the midsection of the ball, as opposed to, you know, down below and trying to get under it and getting some loft under it. And just a bad kick. And it's unfortunate because it came in such a crucial, critical situation. And really, for the better part of the past 2+ seasons now, Mason Crosby's been very, very solid. Way back in 20, it seems like almost distant memory now, is way back in 2012 when Mason Crosby really had that trying, difficult season, but he's been able to put that in his past and has done well of late, and didn't do so well on this one kick. So just kind of coming out there yesterday or earlier this week that Tim Mastay did not indeed hit the football. But if we were to look at something that's came out since that time, one other big news item I kind of want to talk about here. I don't know if it's big, but I think it's notable. Offensive lineman Josh Sitton, I thought, made an interesting comment. He was the guest on Clubhouse Live, the Packers talk show that airs on Monday evenings. And he said, quote, "I think that our offense has become too predictable." And it's interesting because I definitely think this is something that's been building and gaining steam, really dating back to the Packers' first loss there against the Denver Broncos now 2 weeks ago. And it's interesting because I think Josh Sitton used the words predictable. And I think, you know, if we look back at that Broncos game, Aaron Rodgers kind of had a different way of putting it, saying in his post-game interview that they need to be more creative. And so it's just, you know, players coming up with different ways basically to say the same thing. And kind of interesting that Mike McCarthy has been kind of poo-pooing this. He constantly kind of you know, going with the company line that, you know, the things are fine, things are okay, and there hasn't really been a whole lot of change in the Packers offense, maybe a little bit here and there, but definitely not enough for, I know, my liking, I know some other fans' liking, but apparently not enough for the coaching staff to really institute change on the Packers offense. And, you know, I'll throw some ideas here, and they're definitely not my own. And I remember, I know I've been influenced heavily by the work of Andy Benoit at Sports Illustrated, or their MMQB website, when he also wrote this in the aftermath of that Denver Broncos loss, that the Packers kind of need to employ a little bit of that New England Patriots offense and the things they do to get their receivers open quite a bit, because they have a lot of small receivers and have for a while. When you go back to the Wes Welkers and Julian Edelman and guys they've had there over time, and the way they work to get those guys open, a lot of bunch formations that you don't know which direction the receivers are going to go. Are they going to go left? Are they going to go right? Are they going to go straight downfield? And on top of that, crossing routes, kind of those rub routes, is, some people might call them picks. That would be illegal, but it, you know, definitely trying to you know, almost set a natural screen in which if the players themselves kind of cross, it's tough for the defensive player to get around that a lot of times. And trying to get just another way to get a wide receiver open. And I think the Packers can do that more. And on top of that, the snaps under center are almost going the way of the dinosaur in Green Bay. There's been, not to say the Packers never do them, but they've been frequently been phased out, I guess. It's not phased out entirely, but it, you know, it's they're going in shotgun so much of the time. And you know, I think it's nice to, I'm not saying not go under shotgun. You can definitely go under shotgun a majority of the time in today's day and age in the NFL. Nothing wrong with that. But it's just, you know, start working in under center more than what you've done. I think that's only going to help the play action passing game. It's going to open things up more there as you start running from under center and start running occasionally from an I formation. Get a lead blocker in there, whether it's John Kuhn or you want to start using Eric Ripkowski, fine, whatever. I don't really care who you use. I think they're both capable at this point. So start doing that. And you know, the Packers haven't occasionally used that pistol formation. That's good too. Sprinkle that in even more so than you've been doing. Just need different stuff, you know. Just keep defenses on their toes. Keep them thinking. Keep, you know, just keep trying different stuff. Under center, pistol, shotgun. All, you know, keep mixing them up all the time. And that's what you're not seeing, I think, from this Packers team, and you need to start seeing more of. And again, not all my original thoughts. Many players have many people have echoed these same sentiments. But it's got to be time where this is starting to sink into these coaches' heads here, and not just Mike McCarthy. We're talking about Tom Clements. We're talking about offensive coordinator Edgar Bennett too. These guys got to start coming up with some new and creative ways to get this offense back on track. And maybe it's good that, you know, this kind of new way of bringing it out here by saying the offense has become too predictable from Josh Sitton. Maybe it's good that a guy is speaking up, and especially a guy who's now in his eighth year in the NFL. He's 29 years old. He's one of the few multi-time Pro Bowlers on the Packers roster, apart from Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews. You know, Josh Sitton has some clout, and when he says something like that, maybe it's time to start paying attention. You know, you could sit here and say, well, you know, Mike McCarthy and Tom Clements and Edgar Bennett, they got a whole lot more experience in the NFL. Well, that doesn't always make you right. You know, that just because they've been around longer doesn't mean they're always right. I think the Packers going to have to adapt here a little bit, and they got to start doing it before it's too late. It's not too late right now. You know, three straight losses is not a good look. It's not a good thing. But the Packers haven't been eliminated from playoff contention. You know, they can go and get first place back in the division with this upcoming Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings. It's just that they got to start instituting change rather, you know, shortly here. Because it's just, you know, at this point, you're starting to almost bang your head against the wall. And things got to start, you know, giving defenses some different looks. Keep them on their toes. Keep them thinking and reacting instead of just, you know, I think Sid's saying about they're playing a little too fast. You got to make them think and hesitate and things like that. If you're the Packers offense, and that's just not what they've been doing lately. One more item of Packers news here. The Packers made a move on the practice squad, signing B.J. McBride on Tuesday, a rookie from the University of Connecticut. I believe he was actually signed as an undrafted rookie by the Philadelphia Eagles earlier, but has since been released by them as well. But I think the notable thing about this transaction is that it's been a revolving door on the practice squad, and particularly a kind of a spot reserved for a defensive lineman. There isn't a rule that they have to have this spot be a defensive lineman, but they've been trying guys out now for several weeks, and they just, ever since losing Bruce Gaston, they haven't found somebody quite as good or somebody quite that they're quite comfortable with. It's been interesting that the Packers, you know, had Gaston originally on their 53-man roster to start the season. They released him to make room for Jared Aberderis at the time, and you didn't think a whole lot about it, especially because they invited Gaston back to the practice squad. But, you know, when you're on the practice squad, you're basically, you're making peanuts. You're not making a whole lot. You really are not on the practice squad. And so the Packers, you know, they didn't offer Gaston enough, I guess. Gaston left to sign with the Chicago Bears, where he's making, you know, 10 times more money probably. And the Packers have tried out several guys. They signed Justin Hamilton right after the bye week. He lasted 2 weeks. And then just a week ago, they signed Eric Kroom. He lasted 7 days, and they released him to make room for McBride. And now they're trying a new guy. All of these guys, defensive linemen. And they just haven't been comfortable enough with any of them, apparently. You know, I'm only assuming here. They haven't commented on any of these guys, but just kind of interesting how they're cycling through these guys like nothing here. And can't find one that'll stick. It looks like they're not satisfied with these guys who they've been trying out. And now they go to B.J. McBride. Here's a guy who barely even played in college. I just quickly looked up his statistics. He doesn't have a single sack in college for a defensive lineman. A single sack. I mean, that's not good. But if we continue on with our final segment of the show,
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday. I think what you're looking forward to today is the Packers injury report, and especially the guys that were injured in Sunday's game. Those coming out of the game with injuries include wide receiver Jared Aberderis, who took the hard hit to his back, to his ribs, by Glover Quinn. You've got David Bakhtiari, offensive lineman, exiting the game with a knee injury, and safety HaHa Clinton Dix leaving with what they were examining him at the time for a concussion. I'm not sure if it was ever been confirmed that he officially had that or not, because it did happen late in the game. Head coach Mike McCarthy seemed to think that both Bakhtiari and Clinton Dix, he said they, quote, look good. And, you know, he acknowledged, you know, he's not a doctor. And maybe there's more than meets the eye there. But I think more than anything, Bakhtiari and Glenn Dix avoided major injury. Among these three, probably worried about Jared Aberderis more than anybody because of his injury history. Obviously, if you're a Packers fan or a Wisconsin fan, you know the story by now. You know his background by now. Last season, his rookie season, he missed the whole year with an ACL injury. This year during training camp, he suffers a concussion, has a history of concussions dating back to college where he suffered at least one. It was been reported in the media that he's suffered several concussions in college, which Aberderis denies, but at least his second here. So that's a little bit of a concern. I think maybe some people thought he may have suffered a concussion against the Lions, but that doesn't appear to be the case. It would appear to be the ribs. I don't know if there was any whiplash involved with that hit. It was definitely a hard one. I can't blame Jared Aberderis for hurting it. That would have hurt me. It would have hurt nearly anybody in the NFL the way he took that shot. You hope he's okay. Hopefully it's just something, you know, something that you can get over, heal from. I don't know how much time it'll take to heal. But again, that's what we're waiting for on Wednesday, the first injury report of the week. They'll release their, you know, practice status, limited, full, or out, or did not participate. We'll learn more with that Wednesday afternoon when the Packers release that. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us today. Thank you to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com for joining us on the show. And thanks for listening to the 600th episode of Railbird Central. Hit another milestone here today, and that's always fun. If you could, my call to action, we'd appreciate it if you could do us a favor here on our 600th show. Go to iTunes, give us a brief rating, review, whatever you want to give us. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. We'd really appreciate it if you could do that for us for listening in exchange for listening to the show. But we'll see you, folks. We'll be back again on Friday with a more in-depth interview of the upcoming Vikings game. We'll talk to you then. On behalf of everybody at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Kirivu. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called The Surf by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack Go.